Off the Ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.
So we're looking ahead to the Six Nations. We have Malcolm O'Kelly in studio and Rory O'Connor from the Irish Independent. Gents, you're both very welcome.
It's Joe.
Thanks for coming in. I was looking through an interview Malcolm O'Kelly did recently, or in the last couple of years in the Irish Examiner. Who would you invite to your dream dinner party?
Oh, changes every time.
It's a good question. Malcolm O'Kelly went for...
I remember.
Brendan Gleeson.
Oh, this was a golf-orientated one now, to be fair.
Brendan Gleeson's an actor.
I know, yeah, but you kind of, he's interesting. You kind of... Anyway, why are you...
Sorry, this is... What does this have to do with
Brendan
golf?
Brendan Gleeson, you're getting very defensive. Maybe it's a great answer.
Yeah. Stand by, Brendan Gleeson. Nothing wrong with Brendan Gleeson. Brendan Gleeson.
What's coming, like?
Luke Kelly.
Oh, right, okay. Well, this isn't obviously a golf-related one.
No, this is just pick anyone you want. Brendan Gleeson.
Okay.
You went for Luke Kelly.
Yeah, there'd probably be any fight, I'd say, would there? Would there be any fight in that
very Dubliner.
I don't think so, yeah. I mean, it's a real dubs. And then Leonardo da Vinci thrown in. And then you have Salma Hayek and Angelina Jolie, just to keep manners and everybody. And then you said, I'd also invite Hozier and get him and Luke Kelly to do a duet.
Did I?
There's your answer.
Sound like me. Yeah, good night. I'll go with that again.
Leonardo da Vinci, is that the engineer in you?
Well, he's a genius, right? Yeah.
I think we can agree on that, yeah.
Yeah. We've got to have someone of real stature there.
Are you a civil engineer? Qualified?
Yeah, I studied engineering and came out with a civil engineering degree, yeah.
Okay, so what would that qualify you to do?
Bridges, roads.
Right.
Yeah.
I was wondering if that was why you had picked Da Vinci, because obviously...
Well,
he had an engineering streak in him.
Maybe that's it. I don't know. It was impulsive, I'd say.
I mean, it doesn't sound like you remember it or you've given it any thought since. Brendan Gleeson, Luke Kelly and Leonardo da Vinci.
I wouldn't have picked.
It's a hell of an answer. So, Six Nations, you looking forward to it?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Highlight of the winter.
It does, it does just kick off a sense of we're out of the worst of it now, weather-wise and January-wise. And this one in particular, this year in particular, Rory sets up amazingly well. I mean, it's just so interesting. Yeah. I appreciate World Cup is the big thing this year, but the Six Nations is poised so beautifully.
Helps frame it as well, doesn't it? Even, you know, Ireland-Scotland gets an extra bit of glamour because it's a World Cup warm-up. Everything's got ramifications. It adds another dimension to it. But I think every year for the last couple of years, when that was over at the Six Nations launch during the week, and every year it's kind of like, oh, this is the best one ever. But there's an argument to be made this year that everyone is stronger than they were the year before.
You've got like 2, 3, and 4, and perhaps Scotland, I think, nowhere there, 6 or 7.
I think they're 8, actually.
There's a very good chance the World Cup winner is coming out of this field. And that makes it very exciting. And you know, that there's every chance someone could do their chances of the World Cup no harm, and then a lot of damage can be done in the next 6 to 8 weeks as well. So it just, it's brilliant. I can't wait.
Yeah. Joe Schmidt made that point, actually. He said, you don't think too much about a World Cup. I think the danger, he said, though, is that you can damage a World Cup with the Six Nations, your confidence, your expectation, your momentum. And that is the worry if you have an absolute disaster in a Six Nations. You've obviously been part of a Six Nations in a World Cup year. Did it change your approach dramatically in a great way?
I'm just trying to think of the 07 one. I think we did reasonably well in the 07. Certainly gave us no reason to feel that we were going the wrong direction, which unfortunately we were. In 03, we had a particularly good, we had a particularly good Six Nations and it came across England last game and they gave us a right beating.
Yeah.
So that was an indication of what was to come. And they were, you know, they were incredibly strong side that year, and would be the World Cup champions.
Yeah.
Without doubt, a big Six Nations for Ireland or for whoever is, you know, a great indicator for form going into a World Cup.
Mm. Yeah. What's your general hunch, Rory? And I ask this because we were just chatting before we came on air briefly, and I was just under the general assumption Rob Kearney would play against England, and neither of you two were so sure. Obviously, we're talking on a Thursday, we're recording, he's due to play against Scarlets on the Friday night, and hopefully all goes well. I don't want to jinx anything, but let's just presume he comes through there and plays somewhere between 60 and 80 minutes. Is your sense that Rob Kearney may not start against England?
I think the percentage call is that he will, that he basically, you know, he needs a game, so they've left him in Dublin, that he has enough store put in, enough work done in that number 15 jersey to be able to slot in next week at Carlton House and train fully then. There's just... It depends on how Joe Schmidt is going to approach the Six Nations. He's a lot of credit in the bank. He's won 3 out of 5 that he's been part of. Reigning Grand Slam champions, and the World Cup is his stated aim this year. He said that, you know, he didn't rule out experimentation when he gave that answer that you read out there. That was a question about experimentation. But I think there is, he will see scope to try and get valuable minutes into players' legs.
Yeah.
Say Jordan Larmour, you know, what would playing a 15 in a Six Nations game against England or Scotland do for him going into the World Cup if he's needed, if Rob Kearney goes down? And Rob Kearney has had a lot of injuries in the last couple of years. Or Will Addison. Or does he want Robbie Henshaw to play there? You know, a bit of a rabbit out of hat. It gets his 3 best centres on, you know, gets them all onto the pitch. I don't know. I think the percentage call is that Kearney plays. Kearney always plays. You know, Kearney is Ireland's 15. It's almost written in stone.
Yeah. But you, I wonder, think if it was any other team than England, you know, and the first one, it being England in the first game, like it's your season, it's your Six Nations definer. If you go down on a home match against England, then maybe due to the fact that, you know, Jordan Armour, a little bit untested, you know, makes a couple of bad decisions, that could be the difference. You know, does he take that chance when you've got a fit Rob Kearney there? That's a big decision. And you know, originally I just presumed that he wouldn't play. You know, the fact he was playing this week, I just assumed that he wouldn't get the nod the following week, and had almost ruled him out. But when you really think about it, you know, it is a brave decision by Schmidt not to pick him if he's fit.
That's huge. Go on, jump in.
No, just the other thing is that you wonder if he's looking at these as World Cup prep in terms of the 7-day turnaround against Scotland away the following week with a travel day in between. Has he got two teams named, you know, with 5 changes in between? He's got a 6-day turnaround between the last 2 games as well, between France and Wales. So how is he going to manage his squad? So maybe Rob Kearney plays this week, but this week he's getting valuable bits of training into Larmour or whoever splits in for the second game.
Yeah.
I think the scenarios that we're not seeing, like, he's taking them away to Portugal out of sight, out of mind for a reason. There are things going on there that we don't know about.
Larmour played obviously fullback against Argentina in November, and there were questions on the back of that game, and Rob Kearney came in. Rob Kearney and Devon Toner had fantastic Novembers in that respect. We've seen Larmour again, like, fullback against Toulouse and Dublin, and I presume he's learning all the time. But like, it's a big, if you're Schmidt and you're planning out the year, it's a kind of big risky thing to potentially do. You put in Larmour, say things didn't go brilliantly, say Ireland lose. One, it dents Larmour's confidence, I would think, a little bit, and maybe there's ways of easing him up to the level he needs to get to without throwing
looking,
him into
you're
the,
looking for
the deep end.
Another substitute for him, another option.
Potentially. And secondly, then, it just transforms the feel of the Six Nations. Suddenly you're massively on the back foot and you have to go to Murrayfield. And, you know, that's a banana skin. You don't want to have a week's break for the Italy game and be 0-2. Like, just the media tension, the storm that would kick off. I don't know, I'm looking over at Rob Kearney and I'm thinking,
he's your
first
man
back in.
But
Larmour in Murrayfield's a very interesting prospect.
Yeah, or Addison. Token. You know, I mean, Addison's in the frame as well. I heard Bernard Driscoll say during the week in here that he's the quickest guy in camp, apparently. Well, so, which is a major string to his bow, as well as all the other things he's brought to the table at Ulster.
That's straight line speed.
Yeah, himself and Larmour are in a real contest for a 23 jersey right now. It's just going to be interesting to see how he manages this 8 weeks. I think it's going to be. You wonder whether he's going to pull a couple of surprises on us, and that could be one of them. But yeah, I think I think you're right. I think beat England, you can experiment away. And your best bet of beating England is probably playing Kearney. You know, Eddie Jones has said that it's going to be a lot of kicking in the game. You know, it's February in Dublin. There's going to be a lot of, you know, conditions could be anything. Percentage call is to pick Rob Kearney.
I think so. I heard Ugo Manya during the week as well saying Mike Brown has to play for England because he's their best player under a high ball, and that's what they're facing. So he's been recalled this for the Six Nations. 1995 is the last time England kicked off this competition in Dublin.
Really?
It's been a long time since we've had it.
Well,
yeah. So I mean, like, just the atmosphere is going to be incredible.
Yeah. And I would imagine 95 England put a whopping score against.
I didn't check. I just assumed.
Yeah. That's it's a phenomenal start. Yeah. Normally, you know, there's always a bit of a warm into it, like. But having the definer first weekend, it's just fantastic. You know, like, as you said, like, that's why you're gonna have to play your top players, you know, and if they're fit at all, get them on the pitch, I think.
Yeah. So Unlike last year's Six Nations, Rory, it's the first time that Henshaw and Ringrose and Bundyaki and Chris Farrell all seem to be fit and available for selection. Whereas last year, Bundyaki had a new partner effectively every time. So everyone is of the opinion that Henshaw and Ringrose are the best partnership to kick things off with. I think Bundyaki will feel a bit What's been going wrong under my tutelage?
At the end of last year, I went back and looked at all of Ireland's tries, did a piece about it, and so many of them, you know, Ireland get bogged down in the 22 at times, and they go through relentless phases, and so many times it's Stander and Aki who get you over the line and score tries. Aki scored so many closer in tries, and that's not to be sniffed at, you know, like his ability to get you over the gain line, make massive tackles as well, but also score tries is unparalleled in that Ireland squad, I would argue. So he struck up a bit of a relationship with Ringrose. He seems to be able to strike a relationship with anyone. That's what we learned last year. And it's very hard to see how you leave him out based on the year that he's just had.
And now, yet everybody says Henshaw and Ringrose is
the best. Yeah, I'm not so sure. And especially, I think England have picked a massive amount of size in their squad. Mm. Now, I'm not sure Tuilagi's going to play. I just had a quick look at the team that beat Australia in the last game.
Yeah, it's interesting. It was Farrell,
Teo, Slade.
Yeah.
Which kind of matches up with Ringrose or Henshaw or Aki.
They have to play Slade, I think.
I think so.
He's their only real ball player unless you push Farrell out to 12.
It's a major change for Eddie Jones to go from a point where he's trying to get Ford and Farrell in the team to then go with a Teo to a Lagi combination. Like, that's a totally different style of rugby. Yeah. You know, if you want a playmaker of sorts in there. And Slade, Teo played against New Zealand as well for them.
Yeah. And they've said no way to Tuilagi pushing into 12, and then you could maybe play Slade. That's another option. But England have their own issues, and my issue with England is that although they had a good end to their November, is that they really lacked, like they kind of let New Zealand off the hook. You know, they're 17 points up, and they let them off the hook. And they haven't really shown like real attack, good attacking rugby that's going to really challenge Ireland in Dublin.
Okay.
Now they're going to be a lot of fire, and they're going to come out with a lot of hate and resentment. But you wonder, really, you know, have they progressed? And
you're not so sure.
I'm not so sure.
What about Ireland centre partnership then?
It's going to be tricky, tough call, but it's a long tournament, you know. So every time the second rows, you know, the two boys coming in, we're saying, oh, like it's going to be big challenges there for our positions, and now suddenly two of them are injured. So for me, I would have thought Henshaw might have played for Leinster this week, just to give him more time.
He does seem to come back very fresh and very fit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did against Scarlets last year, and then at the weekend he looked good again.
I don't know. It's a tough call, you know. But definitely Ringrose has to be in there for me. He's just been phenomenal so far. And I don't know. Bundy, it's a tough call. But Bundy's had more game time, so I'd certainly start him.
Oh, would you?
Yeah.
Okay. And Robbie Henshaw doesn't start.
Robbie Henshaw, then you may, as you say, put him in a full back.
Yeah, maybe last year would suggest that the odds of having all four fit for any great period of time is unlikely, and therefore there may not be a set O'Driscoll and Darcy partnership that will last 7-8 years. Maybe on paper everyone will say, well, it's Ringrose and Henshaw, but how often it happens we may not know.
Yeah, and that's the nature of the game, but it's great to have. I mean, I presume he's swapping them in and out in training over the week in Portugal. Yeah. He'll do the same next week. I presume training will inform a lot of the decision that he makes. I find it very hard to see how you leave Aki out of the team based on the performances of the last year. He's never let Ireland down. But Henshaw is exceptional. You know, there's four excellent players, and Tom Farrell's tearing trees up at Connacht as well, and deserved his call up to the squad. He's probably not going to get much of an in over the next couple of weeks, but you never know. He might get a bench spot or something like that. But I think probably it's going to be Aki and Ringrose. They're the men in position. They beat the All Blacks last time out. Mm-hmm. Very hard to drop them. Yeah. And Aki's shown nothing but good form since. So there has to be a message there to someone like Robbie Henshaw. He can't just walk back in and take the jersey back. But you never know. And whatever combination he goes with, it's going to be a good combination.
Well, that's true. Yeah.
Yeah. Saying that, Henshaw pulled up. You know, pulled up on the, was it before the New Zealand match or was it before the...
It was Argentina.
Argentina.
In the warm-up.
So you know, he was kind of almost incumbent and then he gets injured. So
yeah, it's true. Football, no, that's a fair point, yeah. The second row then. So, I mean, it was always going to be Devin Toner and James Ryan starting anyway. I still think you
could be horses for courses on that one.
Okay.
But if the line-out is your absolute priority, then you have to go with Toner and Ryan.
And are there many games, as you look across the other line-outs in the Six Nations, are there many games where the line-out wouldn't be a priority?
Well, when I say when it's not absolutely essential to have a 6'10" guy playing there.
So how often would that be the case?
Well, maybe Wales. Maybe Italy.
And why Wales? They don't have the height.
Well, I don't know how top notch their lineup defense is.
Right.
At France, maybe another.
Okay.
But certainly with a Togi and Cruz and what have you, Shields maybe. Yeah.
Okay.
They've got some tall timber there.
And what's the Scottish lineup like?
Scottish lineout's not as good. I think Gray is injured at the moment as well, which probably doesn't help them. Traditionally, they would always have some big timber and getting guys up.
Is the Irish lineout at full strength the best in the tournament?
Or England? I think Ireland maybe struggle with the darts a bit. Rory struggles a bit with the darts, and it probably. Reduces their options. But it's a strong lineout. When you've got, as I said, when you've got Devin Toner in there at 6'10", you can just get it into him, hit him each time almost, you know.
So it's kind of concerning just to see how much Ulster struggled in Leicester last week.
Rory's throws were pretty off the mark,
and he's been excellent since. I was one of the people who came out and criticised him after the Argentina game, and he's been really excellent since, and he's earned his place as captain and in the squad. But I think that's why one of the reasons Toner is almost non-negotiable, because he gives such security. So if the throw does start to wobble, you throw him, you know, he calls it on himself, and it's just great faith in it.
And are you able to watch it and tell that actually, say there's a breakdown with a given line-out? How easy is it to pinpoint it on the hooker as opposed to there might have been a malfunction in what went on with the call or with the line-out itself, Matt?
You'd see a malfunction as in if someone didn't get the call. You'd see that pretty easy in that, the jumper rider wouldn't get up, the throw would end up going askew because the hooker has seen that whoever's supposed to go up doesn't go up.
And when you say, so Rory best throwing, what is the failing or what's the issue with it?
It's just really direct, you know. So you have to call a certain type of line out. Like I can remember Henderson calling, I don't know what the communication lines are. When Henderson does a dummy in front of a fella and then goes behind him and then goes up, assuming that he won't get a compete, but if someone goes up straight in front of him, that's when Rory will get beaten.
Because he doesn't put enough loft on the ball?
He doesn't put enough loft on the ball.
It's a bit like Shaquille O'Neal's free throws.
Exactly,
too flat.
His free throws are way too flat.
And is that, it's 37 years of age now, going on 37. I was going to say,
is it a style? It's not a bad thing, but it just puts him under a lot more pressure if you do a dummy in front and then go back.
Okay, so whereas
if you do a dummy, you do a dummy and then come forward, you're looking to beat the guy in front. And if you're Devin Toner and your arms are about 3 or 4 inches longer than any other fella's arms, you'll always get the ball in front. So it doesn't matter if it's not at the absolute peak of his height.
Yes.
As long as the ball is indirect, it's fine.
So when you talk about it limiting options, that flat trajectory.
Yeah, that flat, as opposed to maybe someone like Shane Byrne. But Shane Byrne has a massive wind-up, so he would have this kind of big coil.
Yeah.
So the jumper can read that then as well.
Best is harder to read because it's...
Best, so you can't read him.
You don't know when he's going to throw it.
Yeah, well, he doesn't give you any... he just lets go of the ball.
Yeah.
You haven't got a second to gauge.
Yeah.
You know, so there's no point taking
a soccer player with a short backlift. He might catch the goalkeeper.
Yeah.
Off guard. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, or he's no tell. It's as simple as that.
What about the other line-out throwers in the competition? Who jumps out at you has been particularly good?
Sean Cronin's improved.
Has he?
So I see there. Now, obviously, I think Rory's obviously going to get the nod.
Yeah.
Start with, because he's their captain, he's a phenomenal player, and Sean Cronin is so effective off the bench. But Sean has really improved and is now, you know, if Rory was to get injured, you know, I'd say he might find it hard to get his place back.
What was Cronin doing that he's improved upon?
I think it's just confidence. I think starting a lot of games, working with Devon, his accuracy seems to be up.
Okay. Does he put loft on it in a way that Best doesn't?
A little bit more, right. Yeah, a little bit more, yeah.
Does he have a tell?
It's just you've got more of a tell with him because he obviously has more of a wind-up. Yeah.
So is it very difficult then to have loft without a tell?
Yeah, yeah.
So you've got to rob Peter to pay Paul a little bit.
Exactly, yeah. You've got to give. But Rory, you know, there's no one has less of a tell than Rory.
Really?
So there's huge advantage. Like himself and Paul O'Connell were unbeatable. Because Paul O'Connell would just go straight up, and he had such great spring that he would he'd be up in the air and the ball would be in his hands before anyone could get up.
And so, who timed that? Would Best wait for a move from O'Connell, or would there be eye contact? Or
no, Paul would just go,
and then Best would fire.
So
O'Connell
would take it. Whereas anyone else would have to go back a second. Throw the ball,
yeah.
And by that time the opposition would be up in the air.
They have time to react. Okay,
yeah.
So the way it worked with O'Connell and Best was. Best would wait for O'Connell's spring.
Oh, absolutely,
fire
yeah.
it straight away. Yeah. Opposition have no time to react.
Exactly.
And how does it work without O'Connell there? Same way?
Well, yeah, Dev does that as well.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. But Dev sometimes will catch it more out in front of him rather than at the top of his jump.
Okay.
You know?
Is that a bad thing?
Not a bad thing, unless you got someone up in front of him.
So
and that's the issue.
Dev might be getting a chest height and someone's getting a hand in.
Well, he might have a chest height, but his arms would be fully out. So he'd be catching it at bloody two almost, you know?
Right, okay. All very interesting stuff. So, no Henderson, no Byrne. I was reading, so Dev Toner calls the lineup. James Ryan's been calling it more. And
yeah.
Leinster, they've been trying to get him in that habit.
That's come from HQ. I think there's been a bit of encouragement to try and get him involved on that side of things as well. I think he would have done it for the 20s and at underage level. It's something that, you know, obviously it's a different standard, but higher pressure coming on, but there's an encouragement there. Tyburn calls the line out to Munster, gone straight in there and taken over that part. I think it may be something that he grappled with a little bit at the start, but I mean, it's a huge bonus to have it.
Yeah.
Henderson's doing it with Ulster, so I'm not sure who does it at Connacht.
I was just reading, Murray Kinsler was talking about Quinn Roux and Ulton Delan, and Roux calls it.
Okay.
Ulton Delan doesn't.
Yeah.
So there might be an argument, depending on how comfortable James Ryan is calling it, if Devon Toner was to go off, that you might have Quinn Roux on the bench as... You know, another caller.
I think James Ryan will call him now.
Okay, so if Toner goes off, it goes to Ryan.
Yeah.
But Toner calls it when he's on
Unless
the bench.
Unless Henderson is on the bench. Well, of course, Henderson's injured.
Yeah, but once Toner's on, he's calling it, is he? For Ireland?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, at this stage, yeah.
I would imagine that neither Quinn Roux or Ulton Delan, I could be wrong, have called the lineup. Well, Delan
doesn't
do it for Ireland. You know that?
Yeah.
If there is, like, I'd imagine the two starters will go. Quite, you know, one will go 80 and one will go 75. I think there's a reasonable drop off to the next two. I think it is it's a big risk. Those two players need to stay fit for Ireland to have a really good Six Nations. Because while Roux and Delan are good players, they're not of this. There's a big drop off from that top four to the next ones. I think.
Right. Mm-hmm. Agree with that.
Yeah, and I think for someone like Dev, he had his first injury that I can remember. So for him now, he really needs to get that performance level up to where it was, you know.
It's funny with the line-out, it's one of those things we never talk about until it goes wrong, and then it's an obsession. Mm. That we saw that with the Argentina game leading into New Zealand.
But it's such an attacking weapon now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's take a short break. So we've talked a little bit about Ireland. England are coming to town. Neil Back's going to join us in just a few months' time and give us his thoughts on how things are shaping up over there.
Off the ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.
Now, you're welcome back. So we still have Rory O'Connor from the Irish Independent with us and Malcolm O'Kelly as well. You were just telling me during the ad break, sorry, I have to bring this up because it's such a great stat. We were talking about the line-out still and John Hayes's lifting ability. And how high did you get, you were saying?
Well, it worked it out that I would, to hit me at the top of my height, you'd need to throw the height of a double-decker bus. So, yeah, it was... Pretty high.
I would not have guessed that from watching in the cheap seats that you're getting up that high. It's amazing. Right, we'll move on. Let's talk England. We're joined by World Cup winner, Grand Slam winner, Six Nations winner, Heineken Cup winner. Neil Back, you're there?
Yes, hi guys.
Thanks for joining us. So Malcolm O'Kelly here and Rory O'Connor from the Irish Independent. We're all looking forward to Saturday week. The first time England have opened the Six Nations or Five Nations in Dublin since 1995. So I presume the atmosphere and the appetite suitably whetted over there as well.
We're really looking forward to the challenge, obviously in World Cup year. You know, to stamp the authority, you've got to win the Six Nations and win a Grand Slam. If you can't win five games over 7 weeks, how are you going to win seven games over six weeks in a World Cup? So it's a really important game for both teams, an incredibly tough opening game for England, considering Ireland's form last year, well, over the last couple of years, really.
Yeah. Neil, I'm curious about Eddie Jones' stock over there, given a very tough, difficult Six Nations, obviously, the trip to South Africa, and then a decent November, not least against New Zealand. Where is he now heading into the Six Nations? I would suspect he needs a good one to just really head to the World Cup with everybody having faith in him.
Yeah, last year was very disappointing. Looking at the fixtures on paper pre-tournament, it was always going to be difficult. The opening game, you hope to get off to a winning start. That's because that gives you momentum and belief. We did that last year, but then we had, you know, difficult away games, and Scotland was always going to be a banana skin potentially, and then followed by France and then Ireland. So no one suspected we'd lose three on the bounce, but that's what happened. Thankfully, after a good summer's rest, they came back firing and competed well through the autumn series. Still question marks, but back on track. But, you know, that can be derailed by Ireland this forthcoming game.
Yeah, it feels slightly fragile, but things are back on track to a point.
Yeah.
You mentioned, you know, the defeat to Scotland in particular sticks out in my mind. This time last year, Eddie Jones was talking about, you know, the next frontier for the breakdown and how maybe you might only have to resource rooks with one man, and at Murrayfield that was completely dismantled. You must have been scratching your head a little bit at that.
I was scratching every part of my body, to be honest with you, because we didn't win the breakdown, and in the modern game you've got to win the breakdown. Quick ball is king, and you can't do that unless you're incredibly fortunate and on the front foot. If you're not on the front foot, you can't win it with one, and we weren't on the front foot, and we didn't have enough men, and we didn't do our job, so we were second best and, you know, put to the sword by Scotland. You know, we tend to let Scotland beat us every 10 years. I'm hoping I'm not putting faith in us, but they deserve to win last year. I think it'll be a different case this year, but only if we can get a good start, and that's what it's all about. All the head coaches and players are talking about the first game and not thinking beyond that, because if you win that opening game, doesn't matter how you win it, you've got momentum and you've got belief, and you can take that into the second game and just carry on. If you lose it, it's very difficult. So it's a massive, massive game. I'm massively excited myself about. I'm coming over myself and working with Alison Kirby of the Mail on Sunday and Gulliver's Travels, doing some hospitality, and then I'm going to enjoy the game. What a game it will be.
Well, yeah. I think it's good you get some plugs in as well. That's important.
Neil, curious to know who you think is going to play seven, because Underhill had an unbelievable November and did a job on Leinster back in for Bath before Christmas. I think he might have had a big influence on Saturday, particularly the way Ireland tried to keep the ball. Do you think that there's anyone there who can do a similar job?
Well, I think it's a key area, and, you know, current form, you know, Ireland have it, particularly at that contact area. And then they've got tremendous midfield that can cut anyone apart. So England have to be the absolute best to get near and hopefully sneak a win against Ireland. Anything less. And it's interesting, the back row is, we don't know the full story in terms of injuries of both sides, really. They're playing their cards close to their chest. They're horsing around a bit about who's fit, who's not. I don't think we'll really know until next week, but certainly the back row is a key area and an area that England and particularly Eddie Jones has to get right.
We were just chatting here. I mentioned I was listening to Ugo Magna during the week, and he was saying he wants to see Mike Brown at fullback for sure, given what Ireland can do in the air. Your thoughts on that? And also, we were wondering here, would Manu Tuilagi come back into the side?
I think Manu is starting to get some form back and certainly consistency on the pitch. You know, that's down to Eddie Jones to make that decision. I certainly think he'll be in the 23. In terms of at fullback, you know, Mike Brown has got a track record of his ability under the high ball and his sort of abrasive nature. But, you know, Elliot Daly, you know, many feel that he is a future and you've got to have a bit more pace back there. But you've got to be able to deal with the high balls, which inevitably will come from Ireland. It's a part of their game plan. They will use it. And if they rattle whoever's at fullback early on, then we're in for a tough time because Ireland have got the skill just to play on that weakness. For me, I'd pick Daly there. I'd back him. That's no disrespect to Mike Brown. But I just think, you know, Daly can do it. He hasn't shown the consistency, but give him the chance. And I think, you know, he offers a bit more in other areas as well. But he's got to get that area right.
Mm. I was curious to ask you about Eddie Jones's manner in the media generally. Joe Schmidt was smiling during the week about a few grenades being launched. And, you know, we know Eddie Jones likes to play the media, not least Jack Knowles stuff or just what he says about other teams or his own teams.
Yeah.
As a player, would you find that unhelpful? Would you feel that puts a bit of an extra target on your back, or do you feel ultimately what is said in the media the week of a game has no bearing on what happens on the pitch?
I think Eddie Jones has got tremendous experience as a coach. Over 25 years of experience, he's done every job and he's won some things and he's been in some teams that haven't done well. He is Eddie Jones. He behaves how he behaves. I think as a player, and I can only talk from my own perspective, I didn't really listen to what the opposing coach, or indeed my own coach, said in the paper.
Right.
Because it's irrelevant. He tried to put that to one side. It is a bit of fun and games. It does deflect away. England did pretty well over the autumn series tactically and adapting to the opposition. But there were some key decisions, particularly in that loss to New Zealand, where hopefully they've looked back and remedied that. Because when we play Ireland, there's very little room for error. So we need to be tactically fantastic, deal with the conditions, the referee, and what the opposition are doing. But most importantly, try and implant our game on the opposition. But that's going to be tough against Ireland, that are the form team at the moment.
I guess a quick prediction to finish. It's difficult, I appreciate, when you haven't seen the teams. But from this perspective, yeah. I must say, I'm expecting more of a 2017 in Dublin type game where it was unbelievably attritional and close as opposed to what Ireland did in Twickenham last year. How are you seeing this one?
Yeah, it's going to be tough. The opening games are always tough. And, you know, really the manner of the win is irrespective. It's about winning. We've got to find a way to win. We failed to do that, as I've said, in the autumn against New Zealand, that are certainly up there with Ireland, challenging for that top spot. So I think it will be really close. I think, you know, the margin will be 3 to 5 points. You know, my head says England. My heart says England. And my head is leaning towards Ireland because home form, the form they're in and the momentum they're taking into this Six Nations. It'll be a close one. Hopefully we can pull it off and then we'll have that necessary winning mentality and momentum into the rest of the Six Nations.
Okay, well, we certainly hope you don't. Listen, thanks so much for joining us. Much appreciated.
My pleasure. Cheers.
Neil back there, who's won a few things in his time.
Sure he has.
Are you expecting a kind of the 2017 tussle? It was an amazing game when Ireland stopped England going for the Grand Slam. Or can we reasonably expect something similar to Twickenham last year?
I do think we're a different team. I think I think we're much better with the ball now at holding on to it.
Okay.
Now the conditions, I think, would be a massive factor. Like if it's coming down out of the heavens, then you know, there's only so much rugby that we can really play.
Fair point, yeah. If it's decent conditions, are you seeing a game potentially more akin to Twickenham?
I really see that we have, from what I've seen of England, is they still haven't moved on in terms of how they're playing with the ball. Defensively, they're really strong, and we will really be tested if we can put our game plan and be successful against them. It'd be a great challenge. But if it's really wet, then there's not much we can do. But like as I say, it'd be like 2017.
Yeah,
and
small
it'd be
margins.
Just,
so you, yeah. so when so
we're well capable of doing that, and Ireland have found a way to win, you know, every time, and it's a credit to them that they can deal with conditions and still do enough to put teams to the sword.
Because I must say, I mean, look, think of the New Zealand game at Twickenham, England. Like, they scored some tries. The heavens did open. Maybe that curtailed things. I'm surprised.
I think New Zealand were cock cold.
Okay.
And that does happen. It can happen any side. It can happen Ireland against England. And there's always that risk. But once New Zealand gathered themselves and got in, I think they scored a try right at the end of the first half.
Yeah, they got points anyway.
You always felt that New Zealand were coming back, and England weren't capable of holding on to that lead.
So the team, the back line that day, they had Daly, they had Ashton, Noel came on, they had Slade, they had Teo, they had May, they had Farrell and Youngs.
Yeah,
you would feel there's enough talent there to put some moves together.
But it was more their connections between forwards and backs.
Right.
That was like, you know, you give that back line really good ball and they do damage.
Okay.
But when you're dealing with kind of poor ball and you're you know, against strong defence, it's that interaction between forwards and backs. I think they're kind of like, the forward, you take it up, you take it up. But that interaction that Ireland seemed to have with Johnny, you know, obviously running the show.
Yeah.
You know, it's something that England haven't quite got yet.
Vinopola is very important, though, I think. I think he is the link man, and he has the capacity to draw three or four defenders to him and just give it out the back, and suddenly Farrell has space, or Ford, or whoever you go with. So I think there is, he's a game changer. I know he hasn't quite hit the levels yet, and I heard you and Matt talking about during the week about how he's not trusting his arm, which, you know, if he's not fully confident in his body, he's not going to be able to be as instructive as he normally is, because sometimes he does have to carry that ball into the three or four men.
Yeah.
But I do think that him and his brother give them very different, they're a very different proposition with ball in hand then, because they have the capacity to pass it. Sinclair is a good ball player as well.
Yeah.
Toje probably hasn't kicked on in that regard, but is an excellent second row and is in really good form as well. So I think Saracen's picking up their level a bit. It's probably a bit of a worry. But I think I always go back in that New Zealand game to the fact that they kicked the kickoff went short after they scored. And they just led New Zealand back into the game. They gave away a penalty when they didn't need to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as a halftime approach, just those moments they had to manage.
Yeah.
They didn't have the composure. Now, you're supposed to learn from these things, but the evidence is there that England haven't really learned from those mistakes over the last kind of 12 months, that they have gotten better, but they're not as good in clutch moments. And I wonder about their leadership.
Yeah, I think they've got a bigger step to go to win this match. If they win this match, I think, you know, they've obviously taken a major leap.
Yeah. A word on Wales then, and the other teams in the competition briefly before we go. So, Wales are third in the world. They're right behind us. They beat Australia last November. They beat South Africa. Two losses in the Six Nations last year. They were in Dublin, we remember the Stockdale intercept, and in London. So this year, as they're looking at this thing ahead of them, it's very similar to where we were last year. Their opening night's in Paris. Get over that. And then they have Italy, and then they have a gap week to get ready for England at home. And suddenly, they're going to be looking at March 16th, Ireland coming to Cardiff, and they'll be thinking, there is a grand slam here for us, or certainly a Six Nations. Wales are starting to scare me the more I think about this competition.
Yeah. They have the ability to create unbelievable momentum. You know, for a really, you know, like France really haven't kicked on. In November, they were up and down. You know, obviously they've got a lot of talent, but under Jack Brunel, it just doesn't seem to be going anywhere. And, you know, they're vulnerable. Wales, you know, come out flying and win there, you know, and they've got England at home, then third.
Yeah. A gap week to prepare for that and go again.
You know, it, like we faced that. We were going for a triple crown. Oh God, I can't remember the year. And Wales, out of nowhere, we suddenly hadn't lost and won a Grand Slam.
Oh five.
Oh my God, we played that match. Oh my God, there was no way we were going to win that match.
Really?
It was like all of Wales was. The roof was closed. The support was phenomenal.
100,000 on the streets outside. It was carnage. I was there. Yeah, it was
some game.
Incredible stuff.
It must be even as a team when you go out into that atmosphere. You must look around at each other and say, "How do we even begin to tame all of this madness?"
And like we were dominant up front. We were
on that day.
Yeah, we were dominant up front, but we just every bounce of the ball. Was going, it wasn't going our way.
Kevin Jenkins
charged down on O'Gara and then sprinted onto it. It was a mad day. I think they're going to win it, personally. I think it's perfectly set up. And it's Scotland's last Six Nations. Yeah. He knows the territory well. He hasn't won it in a couple of years, but they've been really close. And going back to that Wales game in Dublin last year, like they found ways of unlocking Ireland that no one else did. Mm. Although Schmidt said Scotland did as well. Schmidt was picking up Scotland yesterday, interestingly enough, at the launch. But there used to be the taste where the year where France and England came to Dublin was the one that Ireland really targeted. But the way it's fallen this year, with England first, a six-day tournament round between France and Wales, you know, even Scotland the week after England, when everyone's battered, there's massive risks in Ireland. If Ireland managed to do this, it's going to be an even better achievement than last year, I think.
That gap week either side of the Italy game is just a nuisance.
Yeah.
It's just so unlucky.
Yeah. But it's you know, it was pretty favourable last year. It rolled nicely for them last year.
Wales
have a lovely setup.
Who's behind the scheduling now, I'd like to know. Should we delve into that job?
Don't know. Is it computers? Is it some algorithm? Is it television?
Yeah. I don't know.
Conspiracy theories, I love it.
What have you heard, Mal? What have you heard?
I genuinely don't know. But it'll be, it's nicely set up for them. They're a good team. It doesn't matter what the regions do generally. They've got really good players.
Very difficult to analyse.
Yeah.
Because you look at the form line of any of the players coming in at club level.
They found a natural replacement to Sam Warburton and Ellis Jenkins, and he got injured. So that's a bit of a risk for them. Okay. They don't have that. I mean, they've loads of good back rows, but that he looked like he was the real deal, and he's gone. I think that, you know, I mentioned it to Neil back, Underhill's a massive loss to England as well. So, you know, in such an, especially against an Ireland team, who just love keeping the ball. I think going after their ball at the breakdown is going to be the key to stopping Ireland. And you lose two of the best breakdown specialists around, that's going to be a risk. But if Wales are rolling into that last game in Cardiff looking for a Grand Slam, they're going to take some stopping.
I know, you're kind of hoping it goes badly for them in Paris and this thing has flittered away. Just not so badly that in Wales, on the 16th, they're playing for pride. You want it to just be not a disaster and not momentum.
Well, you looked at both teams going first. Absolutely. We're neutral, Joe. Come on. Yeah.
Okay.
Enjoy the spectacle.
Well, I mean, it would be unbelievable.
In a World Cup year, you know, like just that would be, what better way to prepare for a World Cup final potentially than going into it? You could play Wales in the semi-final the way it's lined up. Yeah. So, you know, that's the other thing that's happening around the background. But I don't think Scotland should go without a mention either, because they look pretty good, and their regions, you know, conversely to Wales, are going pretty strong themselves, and that game in Murrayfield is going to be pretty good.
A few injuries, Hooker's injuries, problems, probably more so, than any of the sides, probably. But again, for them, they've a kind of soft start. Well, I know they've us, but they have two home matches, you know, so they'd really look, okay, let's get off to a start, let's beat Italy. And you just never know what'll happen against Ireland. We've beaten them before, and they'll go in there to throw the ball around and really challenge us.
Is our last trip to Murrayfield the bus?
Yeah, the bus.
Yeah.
Big pressure on the bus.
Yeah. I mean, they were very good last year again at home.
Yeah, and they were good in Dublin. It was a Stockdale intercept try opened up that game. They're a good team. We're, you know, playing them at the World Cup. They have the capacity to cause Ireland problems. That was one of the most frustrating days of Joe Schmidt's whole career in Ireland, that Murrayfield defeat. You know, they carved out Ireland.
That was the first match of the tournament as well.
Yeah, completely. They defused the whole thing, you know.
Yeah, the air goes out of it so quickly,
absolutely,
doesn't it? Just briefly then to finish, we've touched on France and you're so quickly into clichés about them. So I just want to move on to Conor O'Shea, because there were rumours, I mentioned it to Matt the other night, and I don't think these are massively well-founded. I just saw one or two references to it during the week. The two Laurens at Racing are being sounded out, maybe, about getting involved with Italy. O'Shea's contract goes up until next year. They've lost 10 out of 10 in the Six Nations. Now, it's as hard as it ever was, if not harder, for them not to make that 15 out of 15 losses, which would be dreadful. I know Conor O'Shea is talking about the project and improving Italian rugby generally, but there's no way he wants to go 15 matches in the Six Nations without a win. That is just not...
Interesting, during the week, Parise pretty much unprompted launched an absolutely stirring defence of him and said it would basically be madness to get rid of him at this pace, that he's put in place all these blocks. And you see Treviso are going so well in the Pro 14. Yeah. They were very close to getting out of their group in the Challenge Cup, and you might dismiss the Challenge Cup because we're used to Champions Cup for success, but it would have been the first Italian team to go into knockouts in Europe. So he's trying to catch up with a group of teams that are pulling away all the time. It's very, very difficult. And I think he would suggest that maybe, you know, he may become a director of rugby and to get a coach in that he can keep influencing things behind the scenes. I'd say the Toulouron's agents might have been floating that because I think they're being lined up for the French job after Brunel. I'm not sure. I don't have any insight into that. But I think you can see the progress, even though there are bad days, and they seem to come against Ireland. Ireland have figured out a way of beating them pretty well. But you know, he's impressive.
It's always their depth, you know. Like Treviso, it's great. 18 players from Treviso, 11 players from Zebre. Like if they had a third province that they could develop, you know, you think.
Even if Zebre were better, you know, if they could improve Zebre, at least like Glasgow and Edinburgh have them firing. Like it's kind of one and a half province at this stage.
Yeah.
Appreciating your point about the other five teams in the competition are also improving, which makes it difficult to catch them. Are Italy definitely improving?
Italian rugby is.
Okay, I know that.
The one-off results suggest, in terms of November and the summer, suggest that they have it in them to beat bigger teams. So I think they've better players now. I think there was...
They beat Georgia, you know, who would be
that
the
was
next
a big one,
below.
Yeah.
The next one below. Japan, won one over there. So, yeah, like, they're definitely getting better. But, as you say, at what rate?
Yeah. So to round things off, Rory reckons Wales. We're nailing that in. Wales to win the
Wales,
Six Nations.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Good outside. Yeah.
Mal, who's going to win the Six Nations?
That's a tricky one. I'll go with Ireland.
Okay. Grand Slam.
I don't think a Grand Slam now. I think whoever wins will win a championship.
There'll be no Grand Slam for anyone.
It'll be a championship rather than a Grand Slam.
Bonus points make it quite hard to predict as well. Like, you know, so whoever picks up little bits along the way.
Yeah.
I don't think it'll be Grand Slam either.
Okay. Lads, enjoy it. I'm sure we'll talk to you over the course of it. Rory O'Connor from the Irish Independent and Mal O'Kelly, thanks a million, gents.
Cheers up.
Off the Ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.